Self-driving cars in Arizona. Despite a fatal accident, they're probably not going away.
Well, I think simply because of the number of car companies that are here and invested and operating, I think we're still going to be a hub for this.
From American Public Media, this is Marketplace Tech. I'm John Gordon, in for Molly Wood. The state of Arizona welcomed Uber's self-driving vehicles in 2016. Back then, Arizona Governor Doug Ducey said in a statement, quote, "Arizona is proud to be open for business. California may not want you, but we do." But after a pedestrian was killed by a self-driving Uber car, the state's relationship with the company is under closer scrutiny. Arizona this week suspended Uber's driverless car program in the state for now. But you can still see driverless cars from companies like Waymo on Arizona roads. We wanted to hear more about the reaction in Arizona to the state's willingness to be a laboratory for self-driving cars. So, as part of our regular Friday feature, Quality Assurance, we called up Jimmy Jenkins. He's a reporter for public radio station KJZZ. He joined me from Tempe to talk about how the self-driving experiments have grown since they started in 2016.
Well, I remember it as sort of a gradual thing. They've got that, you know, big thing on the top that everyone has come to know as the LiDAR and the different cameras. But at first, that just looked like some sort of, you know, alien spaceship on the road. And now those little spaceships are everywhere. And they're all different kinds of companies. They've got different makes and models. But I was just walking around the ASU campus in Tempe yesterday. And, you know, these vehicles are still everywhere. So it went from being kind of a novelty to now it's like you're almost used to seeing them on the highways and in the roads of our towns.
Did people have a heads up that driverless cars were going to show up, or was it a bit of a surprise to folks?
Here in Arizona, our governor has always been very supportive of these kinds of things, especially anything that might be, you know, tech oriented or something he can do to lure businesses from California. So I remember there was a statement in 2016 where he accused California of, quote, putting on the brakes of innovation. And so, you know, the governor welcomed this self-driving truck full of the self-driving cars, you know, when it came from California to Arizona. So I think it's always been seen as something that the state was promoting and certainly not hiding from.
Now, how much of a political hot potato does the governor have on his hands?
Well, I think it was evident there was such a huge outcry from everyone here after this last accident happened that the governor did come out and say he was suspending Uber's ability to operate here, but he didn't shut down autonomous driving programs overall. So I think maybe that's the political calculation that's being made there, because you know Governor Ducey prides himself on being a state that does not have a lot of regulation, and I think that is the attempt to draw businesses here. So it would be hard for him to go back on that. So I think in a way here he's tried to keep it relegated to just this one company, but you know overall the practice remains.
I'm going to ask you to prognosticate just a little bit based on your reporting on driverless cars in Arizona. What do you think the future looks like?
Well, I think simply because of the number of car companies that are here and invested and operating, I think we're still going to be a hub for this. My colleagues have done reporting on how this is a great place to do car testing as well. So there are so many factors that keep this industry here, at least based in the Southwest, that I think even if you have these regional changes as this grows, I think it's always going to be probably a part of the Southwest because it's just so heavily entrenched here. I mean, I know I've said it before, but you literally see these cars everywhere. And I can't imagine that they're going to go away anytime soon.
That's Jimmy Jenkins. He reports for KJZZ in Phoenix. After the accident in Arizona, Uber has taken driverless cars off the road in other places too, including Toronto, Pittsburgh, and the state of California. And Uber has also said it will not apply to extend its permit to test in California, a permit that expired this week. Stephanie Hughes is the producer of Marketplace Tech. Eve Tro is our senior producer. Our engineer this week is Sarah Bruguer. I'm John Gordon, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM.
Hey, surprise, it's me, Molly. Earlier this week, you remember, we talked to Ernest Cline, the author of the book Ready Player One and screenwriter on the movie that comes out this weekend. There was a little part we left out because it's a tiny bit of a spoiler about a really great scene in the movie. So if you haven't seen it yet and you don't want to know, stop listening now. But if you do want to know, it is a fun exchange about sort of a key change in one of the challenges. Here's me and Ernest Cline. Think of this as your own little Ready Player One Easter egg. There obviously are a lot of changes in the movie compared to the book. The challenges are all different. And even the big movie scene changed from featuring war games to featuring The Shining. Did you just want to try something new? Could you not get the rights to war games? Like, why The Shining?
Well, there are a lot of things in the book that will work in a novel, things that will work in a novel that won't work in a film, because they're two different mediums with completely different strengths and weaknesses. And you can have somebody stand at an old Pac-Man game for a couple hours trying to play a perfect game in a novel, but in a movie, I think it would stop that dead. So we, ended up reimagining a lot of the challenges to make them more cinematic. And, we had talked about going into one of the movies mentioned in the book with Blade Runner. And though Warner Brothers owned that, and, Steven was friends with Ridley Scott and had been on the set of Blade Runner, there were legal problems that just made it impossible to do Blade Runner. And, we talked about Monty Python and war games, but what we settled upon was we wanted a film like Blade Runner that had like a unique visual style that would be familiar to, pretty much anyone who had ever watched movies, because, once the characters go into that film, we wanted it to, everyone to have this feeling of going into a familiar place. And We made a list of other 80s movies that we thought kind of fit that criteria. But once Steven saw The Shining, he had an instant excitement. And that was, one of my most enjoyable parts of the adaptation process for me, because that was when I got to see Steven Spielberg geek out about one of his heroes and get to work with him to concoct, this sequence that would pay tribute to one of his heroes, which is kind of what I had been doing the whole time I was writing Ready Player One. And our cinematographer, Janusz Kaminski, also, like, he and Steven, just the two biggest Stanley Kubrick Shining fanboys, and they had so much fun, creating that sequence and duplicating, Stanley's camera work and just going down to these minute details. And I had the honor of, helping put that together and imagining how we could turn that movie into like a fun, like a fun house that our characters would get trapped in. So, I love that change, and I think it very much is in the spirit of the book. It's always what you hope for in a film adaptation. It can never be exactly the same, but if you're lucky, it can capture the spirit of the story and the characters and convey them in a fun, cinematic, abbreviated way. And I really feel like Ready Player One does that.